we will be going through the scriptures, both through our Bibles and a portion in the book of Enoch, looking at the law, looking at the prophecies involving the Feast of Sukkot, so we understand what it means for us today, especially, and what it means in the future, as well as understanding what was going on in the past. Okay, so as was read for us earlier today in the book of Leviticus chapter 23, that portion in verses 33 through 44. I will not read the whole thing because it was read for us already, but we see how the Eternal commanded the children of Israel through Moses that in the seventh month, the month Ethanim, the month of the everlasting brook, that's sometimes called Tishri, I believe, also traditionally, but for us it's the seventh month. We see that the command was given from the Eternal of Hosts to Moses, his prophet, that the children of Israel should on the 15th day of the seventh month have a feast of booths, a feast of tabernacles, or Sukkot, for 7 days unto the Eternal. So they were to have this for 7 days. That's the instructions. Not 8 days, 7 days. But there is an eighth day connected to this, and we'll look at that a little bit. But the dwelling in the booths, where you have to dwell in booths, is for 7 days, not 8 days. So it's for 7 days you are to dwell in booths. So on the first day is a holy convocation, as we're having today, a holy gathering. Let me stop here to say a few things about this. Why would the creator of the universe, a being that's so great, like when we understand him from the scriptures and when we understand him from meditating, that means thinking critically, logically about nature, a being that's so great, a being that's infinite, a being that's infinite in magnitude, as I always like to bring up, it's not often brought out by others, so I like to make sure that's brought out, that Elohim, the Elohim we serve, cannot be put in a temple, cannot be bound by the heavens. He is an infinitely immense being. I want us to make sure we understand what I'm saying. He is an infinitely immense being. There's no end to his size, okay? There's no end to his size, as well as there are no end to his duration, to his years. He is the first reality to exist, and as such, there's nothing that ever existed before him. He doesn't dwell in anything in his nature. He could dwell in things if he chooses. He came upon the mountain and thundered, as the song was singing to us when he presented the law, his law to the children of Israel on that mountain, that first time he went down before them. That was an amazing sight, but that was still a humbled aspect or coming of Elohim on that mountain, even though it was frightening and terrible to anyone. That does not compare to what he really is like. Just as he could come and dwell between the cherubim over the Ark of the Covenant, as we touched on a little bit during Day of Atonement, right? He dwells between the cherubim. It's not a big box. It's about a meter, about 3 feet by 3 feet high wide. So you can tell it's not a big thing. And then the glory would come right between the two cherubim that stretched out their wings. So it's not a large object. And yet the Eternal of Hosts come between that in shining light, which filled the entire tabernacle. And no one can come in when he's in there like that, unless they're called, because you will immediately die from the presence. All right, now that's between the cherubim. And he could literally dwell inside us. For those of us that have circumcised hearts, that are purified ourselves and made ourselves fit vessels where we don't live in sin, he dwells in us. All of us who are struggling that are repenting or whatever, he dwells around us. He's with us. But just as he promised, I would like to say this, as he promised to he told the disciples, through his son, he says, he is with you, but shall be in you. Because there's a time that Elohim walks with us, the spirit of Elohim walks with us, and when we are ready, he covenants with us and dwells in us. So the point, so going back here, not to digress too much, that our eternal, the Elohim is an infinitely immense being. He's an infinitely intelligent being. Why would he tell? Why is it so important for him to tell people, look, on the 15th of the seventh month, you are to dwell in booths? What's so important about dwelling in booths? Why is that important? Why would the creator of the universe, whose glory is beyond any cosmic thing we can know, ask for such a simple thing, that you shall dwell in booths. We're not going to cover all of this, but we've covered this in the past few years when we covered Sukkot, is because it represents what he did for them and with them, what he was doing. And we'll look at that quickly in a little bit. So let's continue and we'll come back to that, what he was doing. Why is this infinitely great being, excellent being, asking for such a thing? Dwell in booths? Why is that important to you, O Eternal, right? So we'll cover that again. So let's continue a little bit. So on the first day is a holy convocation that we're doing today. We're not to do any servile work. Unlike the Day of Atonement, unlike the weekly Sabbath, you can prepare your food on these days. Actually, on all the holy days, except the seventh-day Sabbath and the Day of Atonement, you can prepare your food. Please don't be deceived by any of the people today that claim to be commandment keepers that are relaxing the laws of Elohim. There's no place in the New Testament that allows for the laws to be relaxed. That's why Yeshua says, whoever breaks the least of these shall be called least in the kingdom. So it really says relaxes. It's not even breaking them, but that making them less than what they are. And there's a lot of people today with talit on and all sorts of fancy outfits, and they're telling people it's okay to cook on the seventh-day Sabbath. It's not. Okay, I just want you to really understand what the scriptures say. There's nothing in the new covenant that allows for the relaxing of the commandment. Within the law itself, there are situations where the law permits things under difficult situations where you had no time to prepare, really, where you really had no time to prepare. Elohim understands that. Okay, and that's what, but other than that, we're not to take it upon ourselves to go and cook on the seventh-day Sabbath or on the Day of Atonement. But on these days, the days of Sukkot, you're not to do servile work. That's heavy work, that kind of a thing. But you can prepare your foods because it's a feast day. And all of us, all the Israelites, were to prepare food to feast and eat and so on on the Day of Sukkot as they celebrate. So they are to celebrate 7 days, not 8 days. So from that first day, you would dwell in booths for 7 days. You shall offer an offering made by fire to the Eternal. We don't offer sacrifices to the Eternal, any type of zabayim, any type of bloody sacrifice, blessed, but we offer our offerings of praise where we meditate, where we take our time. We don't rush and open our mouths. Where we take our time and meditate and come really where our mind becomes a pure, holy sanctuary for Elohim. Then we open our mouths or our minds and we offer praise. Otherwise, the praise is in vain and unclean and abomination. We don't just rush and open our mouth, praise this or praise that. We have to take our time and make sure our minds are right, that we've purified our thoughts, that we know when our hearts are right before Elohim. And that's when we come and offer our praise. And that's a blessing to do it. For anyone who's not too accustomed to doing that, that's what he expects of us. Just like the holy temple, before the priests offer anything, it had to make sure that everything is ready. Before the priest offers the zabayim, the bloody sacrifice, he has to make sure that animal is perfect, right? So likewise, before we open our mouths before Elohim, not that he is quick to destroy, it's not that, it's just that he judges the heart. And if our hearts aren't right, though we may say blessings and things as much as we want in our thoughts or through our mouths, if our hearts and minds aren't connected with what we're saying, he doesn't receive it. He doesn't. He will not receive it. He'll only receive it when we're saying it with all our hearts, all our souls, sincerely. And sometimes, I know for myself, I need to calm down and think. Meditate on who the Eternal is. Let his glory fill my heart and my mind where I'm again undistracted and connected with him in my thoughts and in my heart. And then I offer thanksgiving and praise. So that's why we have these appointed times. So and where we pull away from our work and distractions so we would calm ourselves down and meditate deeply before him, in him, and then offer our thanksgiving. Because he knows our frame, that we are our needs, and he knows that as we work and are busy, it's hard for us to have that kind of concentration where
where we can offer our praise. So that's why he gives us the appointed times. And yes, throughout the days on our daily mundane activities, we do take the time off to offer praise and thanks, but especially during these appointed times, that's what we're to do. It's not the time to be distracted by things, but rather it's a time to really where we calm down and focus and meditate so we can offer our sacrifices of praise and thanksgiving to him.
And we have, and for 7 days, we are to do this. Now, on the eighth day, you shall have another holy convocation. And that's why next Wednesday, we will be meeting here again at the same time. But starting tomorrow night, every evening, just about every evening, I sent out the schedule. If you don't have the schedule, let me know and I'll email it for you. Or you could just call us. But we will have services for 1 hour from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. starting tomorrow, where we continue examining the end time events in light of the Feast of Tabernacles. So it's a solemn assembly on the first day and on the eighth day. But the 7 days we are to dwell in booths. So these, in verse 37, these are the feasts of the Eternal. We shall proclaim to be holy convocations. So they are holy assemblies. And I know that we're all scattered, but always try your best to see if you could pray to find fellow brethren. It's important. It's fine. It's good for us to be able to meet like this, but try to find fellow brethren that you could invite to fellowship with you during these times. Then you will be fulfilling the commandment to convocate, to assemble. We can't assemble by ourselves. And Elohim is merciful, and he knows some of us in our area, we don't know anyone else to assemble with. But again, just pray. Keep praying about it every day, and Elohim will connect you with other people in your local area that you could fellowship in one place. You know, maybe you could visit your friend's place, or the friend could come to your place, and you could still participate in the service like this, but you have a fellow brother or sister with you. So let's pray for that. So it is a solemn assembly, Mikra Kodesh, and you shall do no servile work, no burdenous, heavy work. You only do what's necessary to eat and to relax and to enjoy the time. So it is a feast. So do your best. Let's all do our best during these seven days. Despite everything that's going on in our personal lives and everything around us, let's do our best to rejoice before Elohim. So when he says rejoice, again, I say rejoice, as often said in the New Covenant Scriptures, we are to try our best to enjoy. So prepare your favorite meals or the days that are, throughout the 7 days that are not Sabbaths. If you don't cook, buy something nice if you're able to eat and maybe share with a fellow believer and have sweet fellowship between them. Because what Elohim seeks after is that we love each other. And when we fellowship like this and we share joyful things, he delights in that. He delights to see his children rejoicing together, just as parents enjoy to see their young children playing and innocently playing and enjoy each other's company. And when they're grown, being successful and happy and coming in their homes and laughing and sharing. Elohim loves that. That's our Elohim. That's our Yeshua. So let's keep that in mind. So that's why fellowship, sweet fellowship, is so important. That's what these are all about. So these are the feast of Elohim. These are the celebrations of Elohim. Okay? And so it says, going back here, also in the 15th day of the 7th month, when ye have gathered the fruit, and ye shall keep a feast unto the Eternal 7 days, and the first day shall be in a Sabbath. It's repeating what it says in verses 34 and on. And you shall take to you on the first day, the boughs of goodly trees, of strong good trees, branches of palm trees, and the boughs of thick trees, and the willows of the brook, and you shall rejoice. Again, it's about rejoicing. It's about, I dare say, having fun in a good way. It's rejoicing. He really means it. And else we not go there. But elsewhere, he tells us, when you come to the feast in the book of Deuteronomy, you shall drink, I don't want to say it, but it's the scriptures, drink a little intoxicating drink, he says. Not to make yourself drunk, of course, but it's just to make sure that nobody lies to you and tells you that it's not wine. It is wine. That's why he says it's intoxicating liquor, so no one will tell you, oh, it's just grape juice. No, he's talking about wine. And he's very clear, we're not to be drunk. But he's saying, enjoy yourselves during this feast. He says, eat all the things that are clean and enjoy and rejoice. Bring the ger zadik, or the Gentiles that are in your, the gerim that are with you. Bring them, rejoice. Bring the poor, the orphans. Bring them, rejoice. So unlike the Day of Atonement, where it's a day that you meditate and you afflict yourself in the sense where you are remorseful for your sins, where your soul mourns for your sins, where our souls mourn for what the Messiah had to do to save us, that is to suffer so much to bring us to salvation. We had to mourn during the Day of Atonement. And on the Feast of Trumpets, it was an alarm. It was a memorial. It was an awakening. But in the Feast of Sukkot, it's a time of calm and peace and rejoicing. And without restrictions of sin, if I may put it that way. It's a time reflecting on freedom. Not freedom to sin, but freedom to rejoice in peace, where the enemy, there's no enemy, there's no Satan, there's nothing to worry about. That you could rejoice in your field, and just enjoy the benefits of Elohim and his righteousness and his presence and the fellowship of each other. So you are to take these palm trees and rejoice, and you shall keep it a feast unto verse 41, and you shall keep it a feast unto the first 7 days, I said, not 8 days. And it shall be a statute forever in your generation. Ye shall celebrate it in the seventh month. Ye shall dwell in booths. All that are Israelite born shall dwell in booths. Let's go back, stop here a little. So the Feast of Tabernacles, we see a couple of things, but let me touch this one first, so I don't forget. Sometimes we see Gentile believers stressing themselves over building the booths. And there's nothing wrong if a Gentile believer that's commandment keeping build booths. Nothing wrong with that. But we are not commanded. That's Israelite born. We have to accept the Torah for what it is. Remember, when you read Deuteronomy, we don't have time to go there, it tells you, bring in the Gentile who is in your land to eat with you. So it's showing you the Gentiles are not commanded, we're not commanded to build the booths. This is a strict Israelite thing, okay? Just like the regular Israelite does not need to do what the Levite does. I don't want you to think that the Gentile is left out. Because sometimes when we hear these distinctions, we feel left out. No, we're not left out. It's just certain responsibilities that are given to certain parts of the one body. What's that body? The congregation of Elohim. The congregation of Elohim consists of priests and kings and judges. They don't all do the same thing. They don't all do the same thing. They don't all follow the same laws. There's a general law all must keep, but they don't all do the same thing. For the priests have liberty on the Sabbath days to cook, to turn on a fire. No one else did. Okay? Only the priests could do that. That's why Yeshua said the priests were permitted to, quote unquote, violate the Sabbath law. The general Sabbath law. It didn't apply to the priests. The priests had to keep the Sabbath, but the priests kept the Sabbath differently than the general assembly. The general assembly could not cook, could not lift a piece of wood, you don't do those things, but the priests could. And there are certain things the general assembly could do, the general congregation could do, that the priests couldn't do. There are certain things that the judge could do that the priests wouldn't do. And vice versa, all right? So we have to be very careful about these nuances. So the Gentile kept the Feast of Tabernacles, but did not have to build the booths. Because what is it? What is written in the prophecy? And he shall enlarge the borders of Japheth, and Japheth shall dwell in the tents of Shem, right? Isn't that what the prophecy says? Now, the tents of Shem is more than the Feast of Booths, but it's even reflected in the Feast of Booths, that the Gentiles participate with Shem. It's very important that we put all the prophecies together, all these things together to understand, so we can understand what Elohim is doing. So we who are Gentiles, as we reflect the Feast of Booths, we dwell in the tents, in the booths of Shem. But we're not required to build the booths ourselves. However, in the building of the temple, it is the sons of Japheth that helped build the tabernacle. It's a lot of things going on. But Gentiles did not have to do this. This is a
It is the Israelites who had to build the booths. But all Gentile and Israel had to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. Do you understand what I'm saying? When the Sabbath, when the appointed time came, like the first day and the eighth day for the solemn assembly, both Israelite-born and Gentile who forms the community of the congregation of Elohim, they had to assemble on that day. They had to keep that rest day. They had to. All had to do that. I hope I'm clear. Let's move on. Now, why was this done? Going back to why is this great eternal being asking for such a thing? It says that in verse 43, that your generations may know that I made, that your generations, your future, that I made past tense, that's the past, I made the children of Israel dwell in booths, so that the generations to come, the future, may know that the past generations dwell in booths. So that means when the Israelites are doing this, they're doing it for a purpose. When we Gentiles, believers, and when I say Gentiles, not like the Gentiles of the world, but nations that are of the nations, not necessarily Israelite born, are doing this, we're doing it to remember that, the generations past, before Israel entered the promised land, he made them dwell in booths. What was so important about that? Well, they were originally slaves, and then they were set free. When slaves are set free, it's usually chaotic. Check history. You'll see that. But not with the people of Elohim. Something awesome happened when Elohim set them free. Usually in the movies, Very few movie makers are seeking to glorify Elohim, because they'll show the Israelites coming out all worn and dirty looking and ragtag and all confused, looking miserable. Yes, there were complainers, it's true. But when you go to Numbers chapter 9 and 10, I mean, we won't cover all this because we've covered this before, you see the guidance of the cloud in verse 15 to 23. Of Numbers chapter 9. It says, and on the day that the tabernacle was reared up, or the booth, that's what's called the sukkah, the day the tabernacle or mishkan, is the same thing, was reared up, the cloud covered the tabernacle, namely the tent, the booth of the testimony. And at evening, there was upon the tabernacle, as it were, the appearance of fire until the morning. Whoa. Could you imagine seeing that? Today, could you imagine you are, let's say, camping, let's assume, and all of a sudden you see there appears this immense cloud of glory, a bright cloud. That's why it says cloud of glory. It is bright. It was a bright cloud. And elsewhere, it tells us the cloud covered the entire camp. So sometimes in some movies that try to represent the cloud, they'll just show you a little pillar. It was more than a pillar. It covered the entire company of the Israelites. The entire, shadowed them all. That's what the scriptures tell us, covered them all. That's why the sun didn't smite any of them during the day, during their journeys. So we had a tent made where the holy place and the tabernacle was reared up, and the light, the cloud would come as a cloud in the day to shade them. And at night, it would be a fire to give them light. What else did he do? It says that, and when the cloud was taken up from the tabernacle, then after the children of Israel journeyed in the place where the cloud abode, there their children pitched their tent. So wherever the cloud went, they went. When the cloud stopped, they stopped. And verse 18 says, at the command of the Eternal, the children of Israel journeyed. And it says, at the command of Elohim, they pitched. So it's telling you, it's showing you the charge of Elohim, that he's guiding them. They're not left alone. They're not scattered without, as a sheep without a shepherd. He was their head. How did he live? He lived in a booth. How did they live in their journeys? They lived in booths. They lived in tents. Were they scattered? No. They were organized. We don't have time to go through this, but look through it in the book of Numbers, how he organized them in companies. Certain tribes were in certain positions. They were
organize, and they were to pitch their tents in that order. They were to march in that order. So you see the glorious aspect of dwelling in the booths, that they had the creator of heaven and earth in their midst, living in a booth, tabernacle, where they would have his presence in the glory cloud for shade, or the glorious fire by night for light. And he guided them. Where he went, they went. When he stopped, got it? So that's what that's all about. At his command, they move. At his command, they pitch. They all dwell in booths just like him. So that's a picture of unity, where you are like me, I am become as you, and you are become as me. Where I go, you go, and where I stay, you stay. That's what's so important about the Feast of Booths, because that's what was going on in their journeys. He kept them safe, and the nations were terrified of him. And that's why later on you read about Balaam and Balak, that whole account. They were terrified. The nations saw this. And remember, this was over 1 million people. Remember, it was over 1 million people that were there. And they were not clumped together. They were spread out in a specific order. Could you imagine what that looked like? So why is it important to keep the Feast of Booths? That's why. Because during those days, it was an awesome thing. It was an awesome sight. They were not led by any man or any judge. They were led by the Eternal himself, and Moses, his mediator, only because of their sins. Right? Only because of their sins, they needed the Moses between them. So that's why the Feast of Booths was important in the past, but it has importance in the future as well. So it has importance in the future today as well, and the future. But today, what is that important? It is important that we keep the Feast of Tabernacles with that understanding that we are to project in our actions and our thoughts that Elohim was the leader of his ancient congregation of Elohim, when he gathered them out of the land of Mizraim, out of the land of Egypt. He was their leader. He was in their presence. And when we keep the Feast of Tabernacles today, we have to do it in such a way that it reflects that according to the law. If we don't, we will kind of fail. So we're not grouped together, unfortunately, yet. We're working on that. And I need your prayers to work on that. That's why I tell you, pray. One of the things we can start doing is finding, work hard to find the brother or sister or brothers or sisters in your local area that believe. Don't worry if they say Jesus. Don't worry about those things. Don't worry if they say Lord. Look to see if they love Elohim and love their neighbor. That's the core thing, because everyone who loves Elohim, everyone who loves their neighbor, Elohim will convert their hearts and teach them those things about everything else they had to know. Remember Acts chapter 15, that brother Kosa and I myself have been covering. That's what it's about. Don't trouble those that are truly coming into faith. It's not those that are saying Hebrew words and all of that. That's not what it's about. But those who love. Because that's what Elohim's assemblies are all about. Those who love with all their hearts and all their souls. Okay? So find those who love in your area so you can start building a little community with the people around. Whether it's one or two. He says, remember, two or more are gathered in my name, I am there. Whatsoever they ask in my name, I shall do. So you don't really need a large group. But if you could make a large group, fine. And then we stick together like this. We help each other like this. Like Brother Kosa is all the way in Massachusetts. But he comes on and shares and intends to continue sharing. And that's what we need to try to build. To not build something for ourselves, but just connect. Be that one congregation of Elohim that Elohim wants his people to be, that can represent him in that way. So that when we're all keeping the Feast of Booths together, we keep it in such a way that people can see there's something special going on. And Elohim will guide us for that. So let's move on. So that's what we need to do today. And also remember, before we utter a word or before we try to pray, that we meditate. Make sure our hearts and mind are pure. Make sure that temple, that inner temple, is pure, clear of anything unclean before we try to speak with him. So let's move on to the future. We're going to shift gears a little bit, and we're going to look at the book of Enoch a little bit. But before we do that, we're going to take a brief break, okay? Yeah, we'll take a brief break. So this is part one, and then we'll finish part two. And I'm hoping part two will be a little shorter so we can conclude the service on time. So we're going to take a little break and then continue with part two, and we'll be right back.